I'm Sophie Natto, and you're listening to the second season of The Middle. If you're a media geek and work in public relations, journalism, or marketing, you're in the right place.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that. This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
Open the doors.
Dave, this conversation can serve no purpose anymore.
Today, we're taking a deep dive into artificial intelligence and its impact on the news. How is it shaping news production, and should we be scared that the robots are taking over? My guest today is academic, author, and former journalist Charlie Beckett. Based in the UK, he's the founding director of Polis, a think tank at the London School of Economics, for research and debate around international journalism and society. He's also led the recent publication of a global study on the impact of AI in journalism. The report looks at how newsrooms are currently using AI to do their work and discusses how AI may further disrupt the media ecosystem in the future. Before LSC, Charlie spent more than two decades as a journalist, first at the BBC and then at ITN's Channel 4 in news and documentaries. Hi, Charlie. Welcome to the show. We appreciate you making the time.
It's good to be here.
Yeah. So I'd love to start with a more personal question. You've been researching AI for a while. What drives your passion to take a look at this subject?
That's a good question. It's not that I'm obsessed by algorithms as such. The thing is, I'm a dinosaur. You know, I was a journalist for more than 20 years in the analog age at places like the BBC and Channel 4 News. And I can remember, you know, when mobile phones came along. I can remember when the internet came along.
Wow.
And that was incredibly exciting. And then when I joined the LSE 15 years ago, that's what obsessed me, was how digital was transforming journalism. And I felt, I looked at this stuff and frankly, you know, I was a bit overexcited about it. I saw what this could do for journalists, making them more efficient, making them more creative and connected. And I could see that this was kind of supercharging journalism. I called it network journalism back then. The idea that everything can be amplified, everything can be connected and interactive. It was very exciting, and I called it supermedia for my first book. It was a kind of joke about the superpowers that it could give you. And we've seen, obviously, how that's transformed the business model and the practice of journalism for the last 15 years. And I continue to find it very exciting. I'm just in awe. I'm in awe, especially not just younger journalists, actually. It's often older journalists who have got fantastic traditional skills and insights who are using some of these technologies to connect in new ways. And you know, we had that first wave of people going online. It was a question of taking your newspaper and sticking it on a website. Then we had that second wave, which was sort of social media, where we suddenly went running to Facebook and to Twitter and to Snapchat to try and do journalism there. And then AI, which has sort of been around for a while but has picked up steam in the last couple of years, I kind of felt, well, here comes another wave of change. And it's got, you know, it's got more in common with the second wave, you know, that it's changing everything.
Yeah, it feels,
it's not just one big leap.
Charlie, it feels familiar. It does feel like, you know, that digital wave. And there, you know, and with it, of course, the fear that came at that time. I mean, certainly when people think about AI in news, you know, I think a lot of people assume it involves robots taking over the jobs that humans would normally do. You know, here in Canada, the adoption of AI has been relatively slow. We know newspapers like the Globe and Mail are using AI on the back end. They're working with the Washington Post and ARC Publishing to do that. Can you give me and our audience some of the tangible examples of what you've witnessed in terms of the actual AI that's happening in newsrooms? Because AI also is like a really huge bucket term that, you know, doesn't mean anything, right?
Yeah, no, let's try and define the bucket first, you know, and it's a very leaky bucket. That when we talk about artificial intelligence, that's the one thing we haven't actually got. We haven't got that kind of, you know, super self-thinking computer that can make stuff up and operate independently or not completely. What we're really talking about here is a whole range of technologies from, well, you've talked about robots, automation. We're talking about machine learning, how, we've got a computer program that can look at a data set like 1,000 photos and it can start to process them. And it, so it has a degree of autonomy. So the definition is something like a machine that is starting to do things that humans used to do, and that it can actually start to, in a sense, think for itself. You can set it off and it will come up with the results, if you like, on its own. And that's really important to remember, that this isn't just one tool. And also because of that, it can either be something small. It can be, if you think about it, when you do search, you're right, often using a form of machine learning. Or it can be something super sophisticated, like, the Panama Papers investigation, which goes through millions of documents searching for keywords. And so there's lots of different ways, and it impacts, as you just hinted at different ends of the journalism process. It can help us with finding out stories, searching through data sets. It can help us to make stories. It can do video editing, for example. And also, perhaps most importantly, it can help us connect content to people in a much more effective way. It can tell us what people are interested in at any given time, really, right, and what different people are interested in. And it can help us shape the content to make that more effective. And then it can deliver the stuff. It can, personalize newsletters, that kind of thing. Yeah. And that's a really important, that I would say is the sort of difference between those two previous waves, right, of digital change, that there's a kind of holistic feedback loop. When you start allowing your news flow to be infected by AI, it can be used in all sorts of different interrelated ways. So that's going to be the key question is, how does it scale up in a news organization?
It's fascinating. It sounds like the train has really left the station, though I was struck in reading your report how the language was so similar to the early days of digital news. A lot of newsrooms that you talk to said it's a nice to, but not necessarily transformational. How are newsrooms around the world responding to the arrival of AI?
Well, I think there's a familiar, you're quite right. There's a kind of familiar set of challenges, really. One of them is cultural. You just said it. Oh my God, the robots are coming.
Right.
There's a fear of losing jobs, although I would suggest most journalists are fearful of losing their jobs at the moment for other reasons.
Yes, that seems just like normal for the industry.
Perhaps the real fear is something slightly different, which is I'm going to have to work harder or work differently, and I'm going to have to learn new skills, because I think that's much more likely. Yes, definitely. The promise of this tech is that it's going to do a lot of the boring stuff. I mean, if we're honest, as a journalist, I spent most of my time on the perspiration rather than the inspiration. And, I would love there to be machines that took some of that labor away.
Right. Like transcription not so much, or something, right? You mean transcription?
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good example. Transcription is a great example. And also things like, keeping tabs on things. Instead of you having to keep reading a whole bunch of sources all the time every day to keep across a story, you can program something to do that for you, for example. So it's much more the phrase people use was augmented journalism, the idea is that it frees up time and space for journalists to do other things. Some of those other things are going to involve the AI, because somebody's going to have to edit this stuff,
right?
Someone's going to have to make sure that it's working well and that we understand it properly. But ideally, it's going to free us up to do the journalism, which I think will make the difference in terms of the business model. Creating the kind of content, creating the kind of customer relations, marketing, the investigative journalism, the human interest journalism that will make it make a newsroom stand out.
Right.
Leave the boring stuff like the football results or the share prices to the machine.
Yeah.
And let us get on with what journalists always claim they're good at, which is our judgment, for example. and our insight and our intelligence and our creative juices. You know, let those flow a bit.
You're very optimistic about the human capacity. I find it interesting. I mean, meanwhile, like China's state-run Xinhua news agency, hopefully I'm saying that right, just debuted their first ever AI news anchor. And of course, you know, Charlie, it can read news 24 hours a day and doesn't get tired and just adapts to the news. You know, and I think about the financial pressures in the news business now. I mean, shouldn't we be worried that major news brands will just use AI to find efficiencies and not necessarily default to that human judgment, that expertise that you speak of?
Definitely. Well, I think, frankly, that's been a problem for the history of journalism. The temptation to write boring, repetitive, standard, formatized journalism. I mean, if you say I'm an optimist, well, I'm also a bit critical, including in my own work. You know, you go and look at a lot of news, especially, but even commentary, a lot of it is knee-jerk, predictable. And that's okay, because a lot of journalism is just there to provide a service. It's not always there to win a Pulitzer Prize. And actually, why not? If a machine can do it, and if it creates efficiency, then I think it's crazy, frankly, especially under the economic conditions we live in, to fight that. It's up to us, as you know, if you care about public service journalism, it's up to us to make sure that the resources head in the right direction. And I think it's in the interests of news companies to do that, because what is their big problem at the moment? It's not just making themselves more efficient. It's being attended to at all.
Right,
you know,
right.
Most people, when I talk to real people, they complain that the journalism is either too predictable, as it were, or that they can't find the journalism that they want.
Right.
And that could be a really key help for good journalists, that, you know, great journalists, oh, no one's reading my stuff. You know, I can't get it out there. No one knows about my great stories. Well, AI is a way of helping people to discover the right content, to find the people who are interested in your journalism.
Huh. It's so interesting, you know, at the same time, like, this kind of technology is bleeding into everyday life. And I mean, it's not just in journalism, but in public relations and marketing as well. And you can even see it at a really basic level, like Google adding sentence completion AI to its Gmail messages. And as a writer, I worry that AI will flatten writing, you know, make it more boring. And I wonder if, to your point, like, if journalists lean on this technology, will the journalism actually become more boring? Like, you seem to be very optimistic that they'll fill the space with new and innovative, cool stuff. But isn't the default to, like, that kind of flat writing in this context?
Well, you know, I'd sort of turn it around again. You know, I think there's a lot of flat writing out there already, to be honest. You know, I think that and sometimes there's a lot of sort of colorful writing where the journalist hasn't actually had the time to do proper research or reporting or investigation to actually come up with something more substantial than a glib phrase, you know, or a quick cliche. I think, you know, going back to your point about which I think is a really good one, which is, this is happening everywhere in people's lives. And my point about getting on that train is that if you don't get on the train, a whole bunch of other folk are going to get on it. You know, public relations, corporate relations, other people are going to be processing this information. If it's easy for a machine to do it, well, anybody else can own the machine. So first of all, journalism has to get across this technology, because everybody else is, and everyone else has got a lot more money for the R&D than we have.
Have they really learned, though, Charlie? Like, have they really learned from the digital era, the digital transformation? Have they learned their lesson from that in your research? Do you feel like they've got it?
No, not really. But I think that's partly because I think journalism, you know, has a particular problem. One is, you know, the business model took a big, big hit over the last 10, 20 years, especially with that around advertising. And also that I think it has a cultural problem, that we're very busy getting out the news and we're very worried about what's in the pipeline for tomorrow. We're not a very good industry at getting ahead of the curve. Mm. And that's partly, frankly, about money. And that's why in the report we talk about collaboration. And in, when I say the report, that's what newsrooms are telling us.
Right.
That this industry that has been very parochial, very focused in many good ways on what it does, is suddenly thinking, oh gosh, we can see that the knowledge about this is in universities. We can see that the research spending is happening in tech companies. We can see that the innovation is happening in startups. We better get friendly with these guys. Yeah. You know, we better start teaming up with these people, because that may be our best hope to, you know, be allowed on the train even, right. You know.
Although I would say the real challenge. Newsrooms, Charlie, haven't been terribly good at forging partnerships outside of, you know, the insular world of news. I mean, there seems to be and a lot of hand wringing, obviously, about the intersection between big tech and newsrooms.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal, particularly, obviously. And, you know, I should say, of course, this research was, of course, sponsored by Google.
Of course.
You know.
How else would you do it, really? I mean, right? Is it financial part, right?
I'm sure, and I hope you'd agree, you know, that there's no, that, you know, I'm a pretty independent guy, and the LSE is renowned for its independence. So
I don't think you're in Google's back pocket, Charlie. Don't worry. I think it would be impossible to say that.
They're not paying me enough for that. But I think that's part of it, which is that it's a kind of, you know, love-hate relationship, but it has to be a relationship. And the message, I was surprised, frankly, actually. I agree with you, you know, that journalists haven't had time or the inclination to partner with anybody because we treasure our independence.
Right.
Well, you know, you can die independent if you wish. But the message we were getting was, I mean, the evidence, you know, you go and see it. There are a number of collaborations with universities, for example, cited in the report. There's a whole new generation of intermediary companies and startups who can provide the kind of skills and indeed working with the dreaded tech companies. But here's an interesting point as well, Sophie, was that collaboration within the newsroom or between newsrooms was really important as well.
Interesting.
That, you know, different news organizations working with each other on big investigations, for example. And this is perhaps especially important at a local level, but also on developing products, but also within the newsroom. Don't just leave this to the IT person down the corridor. You know, this is something where everyone's got to get a little bit more knowledgeable about the tech, and they're going to have to work together to create distinctive products, you know, that are, you know, valuable to the news brand's identity and their audience. So when I say collaboration, I don't mean that cuddly thing where we're all holding hands and looking at flowers and singing campfire songs. I mean hard-nosed collaboration where people have a mutual interest in survival and thriving.
Well, perhaps you know, hard times make for great partners. We'll see. One of the areas of AI integration that I find fascinating is how it's changing the editorial process. So we know, for instance, in our conversations with the Globe and Mail here in Canada, that, you know, about 50% of their editorial choices are driven by data now, obviously with the end goal of optimizing content for audience desires to ultimately drive subscriptions. And when they talk to me about this, and other newsrooms talk to me about optimizing for subscriptions, it makes me wonder if in the end we're going to give audiences the news that they want rather than the news that they need, right? And we talk, I mean, this has shown up in other areas like SEO optimization and headlines that create clicks and all that business. What do you worry about when it comes to the integrity of the editorial process and the future of AI?
Yeah, well, we had a big section on this. Well, two sections, really. One big section on ethics and editorial policy, and then on the sort of future of journalism. And frankly, you know, the bit that I worry least about is the so-called sort of filter bubble thing, you know, feeding people stuff they like. Frankly, that's partly because I think the bigger problem is what I mentioned before, when people want something and they can't find it. I mean, that's the first problem. What a waste.
Right. We're drowning in news.
They're drowning in news and they can't find the stuff that they want or need or they want to surprise them. You know, it's a mess.
Right.
So I think really let's sort that out. We can worry about whether we're creating filter bubbles a bit further down the line. You know, I think there's already I mean, we keep forgetting already, or there's a history of journalism that's been a desperate attempt to please the reader, you know, and in the digital era, you mentioned clickbait headlines and crap like that, you know, that there's already, of course, there's commercial pressures. And of course, some people are going to use AI to drive down costs and maximize clicks in a kind of random way. And frankly, I think they are going to, excuse my language, but they're going to piss away their brand,
right?
You know, because if they rely on those machines, then someone else will build a better machine and they will be out of business.
Wow.
It's got to be that you keep that distinctiveness, which tends to be a human created thing. Hmm. You know, it tends to be that your judgment, and it may be your bias even. You know, if you're Fox News, you are super good at pleasing right wing people. If you're The Guardian in London, you're super good at pleasing liberal people. So that kind of shaping your journalism to suit your readers' prejudices already happens. If I'm really interested in you know, football, and I'm interested in West Ham United, then please don't give me a bunch of articles about Arsenal or rugby.
But perhaps you should be hearing about those, though, even though you're not interested. Yeah. I mean, wasn't the point of the news to challenge?
I hear too much. I hear too much about the Arsenal. But I honestly don't think that is the problem at the moment. Hmm. You know, I think certainly, and one of the interesting little subtexts in our survey was people saying that AI can actually correct some of the biases and banalities of existing journalism.
See, that's interesting. Can you explain that
to me?
Yeah.
I'll give you one example, you know, just a little one, which was there's a nice little kind of bot that a couple of newsrooms had developed, which would tell the picture editor or the website manager or whatever the gender balance of the photos that they were using. And if they were using too many men, basically, a little bot would say, "You are being sexist.
Oh,
you are being sexist." You know, and they would correct the balance. So there you have an AI that's actually doing something that is enhancing, you know, the editorial process. And I think there's a load of stuff in that. So, for example, if you're writing a story, now, you know, journalists are intellectually short of time. Let's not call it laziness.
Right.
So they're writing a story. They'll go to their usual sources. They can't quite remember what they wrote before about this story. So they might repeat themselves. And they're perhaps going to think, well, OK, it's the same kind of story that I did 6 months ago. So I'll rewrite it with different quotes kind of thing. Mm. There's tools that can help you as you write that will suggest you different sources, that will offer, you know, different perspectives, that will suggest different, you know, interviews and so on, which might enable you to freshen up your story. It may enable you to deepen your story by saying, hey, this is what we said about this 10 years ago. So you can go, all right, well, this happened before. What happened after that? Mm. So I think there's loads of ways. Sorry to sound optimistic again. But,
you do sound very, because I mean, if I'm an editor at a newspaper, I'm thinking, well, isn't that my job? Like, aren't I supposed to be ensuring that my journalist?
Then do it. And I don't see it enough. Right. I don't see it enough. And I understand why, because I've been an editor. I've been in that position where you've got to fill 55 minutes by 7 o'clock, and you tend to do it by painting by numbers. It's very difficult to step away and think again, to ask what I call the third question, you know. And I think AI can at least help journalists do that. If you think about something like, you know, Twitter and search, these were enormous helps to journalists to sort of potentially at least broaden their sources and become more efficient. And I think in some ways they become rather sort of stale and narrow. Anybody who goes to Twitter for inspiration really needs their head examining. likewise with search, you know, we realize it can be a lazy way to go and do your research.
Right.
But, you know, there are ways. We have the power. You know, the key thing will be for the great journos, the editorial people, the editors, to engage with this technology, to make sure that we develop the systems that actually enhance the journalism rather than just making it more efficient.
And you might actually be able to kind of reorient the formula of news, like the way news is made. Well, it sounds like it will be transformational. Are we able to apply, you know, some of the learnings we had through the digital age? What would you like to see us, you know, having learned from that, what would you like to see newsrooms and other interested players really focus on at this point in our evolution when it comes to AI?
Well, the report we produced wasn't a kind of manual for how to do AI. And that's partly because we recognize people are at such different stages. And also, this is really important, the big companies, you know, the Wall Street Journals, they've got the R&D departments. I think those guys will be okay. It's the middle and lower end of journalism, and journalism in particular countries, for example. I don't know about Canada particularly, but countries with different languages, for example. Mm. There's a real danger of a kind of inequality emerging. But the first step is simply, and we do give a kind of strategy, we give an introduction to how you should approach this. And that's, you know, basically, first of all, is get across it. Start thinking about, start looking, obviously I'd say read my report, but there are lots of other sources out there, which is, first of all, get across this. Don't think of it as something you're going to do when you're forced to do it in 5 years' time. That'll be too late. Mm-hmm. It's not about piling all in. It's not about setting up a 20-person department, bringing in a bunch of boffins. It's about probably starting quite small. It's about doing some pilot projects, seeing what works, seeing what the, you know, KPIs are, or even the ROI on something, seeing how your newsroom structures may have to adapt. And then quite quickly, it's some tough things around hiring, for example. Have you got the right people? And that's very tough, you know, to attract clever AI people into poor old journalism is quite a tough call. You have to convince them of the public service and also the fascination of working in this field. Mm. So it's then about reshaping your newsroom. And then it's about thinking about, as I said at the very beginning, this is where it starts to work. In the newsrooms where it's starting to have traction, it is more transformational. It is about saying, how do these things all fit together? And it's even then thinking about, and this is not a sort of, I think this is quite integral, it's thinking about the ethics of it. It's thinking about, you know, if you have a robot presenter, you've got to make it clear that you're not cheating.
Right.
You know, you don't want deep fakes. Right. It means that you're checking for algorithmic bias. You know, the last thing news wants to do is to be in any way discriminatory. Mm-hmm. And also to make sure that this stuff is working to the goals you want, that the data it produces is accurate enough so that you keep your credibility. But there's a whole stack of stuff, you know, fact-checking and so on, that people can start to do in their journalism. And then they can see how that works. Mm. And they will see how this technology can work for them rather than the other way around.
But ultimately, experimentation, basically. And it sounds like there's going to be quite a bit of work needed to actually move through this change and move through this technology. With the few minutes we have left, I'm wondering if you have any advice for the audience. So not for the newsrooms, but for those of us who read the news and are news junkies every day. Like, how are we supposed to respond to an industry that is undergoing such kind of change? Like, what should we be looking for and what should we demand from our newsrooms as they engage with AI?
Yeah, I think the first thing is actually, you know, ask not what your newsroom can do for you. Ask what you can do for your newsroom and actually get across it yourself. Get away from the hype. Stop reading those articles about whether AI is going to replace human beings, whether AI is going to take all our jobs. And just have a better look at what real people are doing with real tools in this field. And there's such a diversity that if you can't find something, I mean, ring me up, email me. If I can't find you something interesting that relates to your work, then I'll buy you lunch or something, you know?
That's quite an offer, Charlie.
That's my promise. That's my promise on air, you know, because I the diversity of this is incredible. It's, in a sense, it's the problem. That's why people find it difficult to get a handle on it.
Right.
So I would say, you know, go and look at our report and other great books around that show you that this is actually, now the actual tech, I agree, is incredibly complicated. I do not pretend to understand it. But it's a bit like I can drive a car without knowing how to change the oil,
right?
You know, or how it works or how the engine works. But you do have to understand the kind of limitations of it as well as the potential of it. And just that range of functionality. Some of them are very banal. Some of them are quite exciting and creative. And I think we're only just starting to push at the envelope. I think things like you mentioned transcription. Well, what about translation? I think we're getting very close to superb translation. I think we're getting very close to very good text generation that is going to, and you mentioned flattening creative writing. Well, you know, I've seen stuff that is pretty good, even when it's doing more like an op-ed, for example. There is nothing more knee-jerk and banal often than political commentary, you know.
I'm sure there are a lot of columnists who would disagree with you. But yeah.
Yeah. That's and funny. I think, you know, I'm sort of joking, but I think there's a lot of work. And don't just think about text. This is about video. This is one of the biggest areas is going to be audio. You know, so I think there's something for everyone in this. I'm not acting as a salesperson because obviously I'm not making any money out of this, but unfortunately, and I don't think that's the best way to look at it. I think this is the world is going to be data driven. Other industries, and as you said, people's lives are going to be reshaped by artificial intelligence technologies. If journalism doesn't fit in with this and understand it and also write about it, one of the roles for journalism is going to be to investigate these technologies and how they work. You know, that's going to be really important. But it really is one where I'm not saying it's going to kill journalism. I'm not saying it's going to save it either. But I think it's going to be a really critical catalytic factor over the next 3 to 5 years. And with so much else happening in journalism, with so many other pressures, there's a real danger that we're not going to find the time, the attention, of course, the money to get across it.
Well, listen, Charlie, it's a fascinating report, and I would recommend to all of our listeners that they dive into it and learn more. And I just want to thank you so much for your expertise and teaching us today everything you know about this subject. It's been fantastic. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to continue the conversation, find us on Twitter. Charlie is at Charlie Beckett, and I'm at Sophie Natto.